Okay, I think I might start. There'll probably be some more people join in as we go along. So, welcome everyone to this online lecture from Nurse Learning. My name's Wayne Naylor, and I'm ringing in from New Zealand. And I guess there's going to be people from around the world. There's already a few people from different places. So, good morning to those in the UK. Good afternoon and good evening to everyone else in the world who's in different time zones. We are currently at 9 o'clock at night here in New Zealand. Just a couple of things to say first off, that the presentation is going to be recorded and it will be available on the cancermedicine.org website after the presentation. If you could keep any questions to the end would be good, and I'll answer them if you just type them in on the chat at the end, and I'll answer them as we go along. And also just a wee word of warning, especially for those people who just got up over where the sun is coming up, that there are a few unpleasant photos of slides in my presentation which I've used to illustrate some of the difficult wounds that I've come across, and that are probably going to be similar to what you've seen as well. So what I plan to do is start with some tips on using available dressings in ways that might be to your advantage, and then I want to look at different areas of the body that present challenges for dressing wounds when they're in these places. And I've got quite a few different case studies to illustrate those type of wounds, and also to look at some of the solutions to those problems as well. Now, most of this presentation is based on my experience working in wound care with cancer and palliative care patients over the last 11 years or so, as well as that of my colleagues also doing similar jobs and those working in other areas of wound care. And the reason for that is there's really not a lot of literature around on, to provide us with evidence on how to manage difficult wounds like the ones I'm going to show you, and particularly in the cancer and palliative care patient groups. So because I'm on the other side of the world, I thought it'd be useful, well, to most people, just around the corner from others, I thought it'd be useful to let you all see what I look like so you can know who's speaking. It's a very odd sensation, I have to say, sitting here in my lounge at home actually doing this presentation, which is traveling around the world. So that's me. And next, just a wee glimpse of New Zealand. This is Hokitika Gorge, which is not far from where I grew up on the west coast of the South Island. A lot of native bush around that area, and a lot of rivers actually, and this is one particularly nice spot. Yeah, this can be found all over New Zealand, and you're more than welcome to come and visit us. It's a great country. So, just to sort of start off by painting a bit of a picture really around what is it that makes a wound challenging. Well, obviously there is the size of the wound, and in particular this really relates to wounds that are large. They can be difficult to get a dressing big enough to cover it. They can cover more than one part of the body sometimes, and you'll see that in some of the wounds that I show you later on in the presentation. The shape of the wound, again, and I'll talk about this with regards to dressings, there's no wound really that comes in the same shape as the dressings that we get. And particularly wounds like pressure ulcers, which can be very deep and also very extensive, fungating wounds, very different in their shape. They can be protruding, or they can be a cavity. They can be very extensive, or they can be quite small but still have a lot of symptoms related to them. The location of the wound could be challenging. Fungating wounds again spring to mind because they occur in a lot of different places in the body. Almost every part of the body I've seen a fungating wound. But they occur often in places, particularly the breast or the head and neck area, the two most common sites of fungating wounds. And those are two areas that are quite difficult to dress for a number of reasons, and I'll talk about those two areas in particular a bit later on. the symptoms related to the wounds, things like heavy exudate, malodor, pain, necrotic tissue, infection. These things can be a challenge because you need to be able to select a dressing that's going to manage multiple symptoms often and at the same time meet your needs with regards to the size and the shape and being able to fix that dressing in some of these difficult locations. The goals of care can present a challenge when what you're trying to do is provide comfort for the patient rather than trying to heal the wound. So sometimes you may not want to follow traditional wound care practices, which can be sometimes cause some disagreement with colleagues about what you're trying to do and why you're using particular products. And often these wounds, which really are the palliative care patients when you're aiming for comfort and symptom management rather than healing, can present significant problems with because they occur alongside the patient's illness as well, which is limiting their life. Another challenge which we come up against in wound care, in particular with chronic wounds, is patient preferences and their lifestyle choices. I've often looked after patients who have had a lot of different dressings tried on their wound, and this is most common probably with patients with chronic leg ulcers where they know or they've had a bad experience with a dressing in the past and they don't want that used again, so it starts to limit your choice. And lifestyle, things like what the patient wants to do, go swimming, do walking, things that may interfere with the fixation of the dressing or the actual type of dressing you can choose to use on their wound. So there are quite a few different aspects to wounds that can make them challenging, and often they all occur at the same time, which makes things even more difficult. So this next slide is of a fungating breast wound in a patient who I saw here about 2 years ago. As you can see, this has a lot of the characteristics of a challenging wound. It's very large. Her whole breast has been taken over by tumour. There's a lot of necrotic tissue there. The wound was heavily exudating. It was very malodorous. And it was also very painful. She had accompanying lymphedema of her arm as well, which you can see at the top of her arm there. It's very swollen because of lymph node involvement under her arm. So getting a dressing to fit over that wound under her arms where it extended around to the back was a big challenge, and at the same time trying to manage the symptoms, and then alongside that the patient has just been diagnosed at this stage with metastatic breast cancer, so now having to make decisions about treatment with chemotherapy and radiotherapy, which we're going to complicate the wound even more. So one of the most important things that you can do with any wound really is to do a good assessment. If you don't do an assessment at the beginning, like any type of treatment, you won't know what you're dealing with and you will not have enough information to choose the right type of products for your patient's wound. So in doing an assessment you can determine the size and the shape of the dressing you need because you will have measured the wound. You will know what sort of properties your dressing is going to need based on the symptoms of the wound and also what you want to achieve with your wound care. Any complicating factors like infection, the pain, the malodor, exudate, etc. You can talk to the patient about what dressings they've had used previously, what worked, what didn't work, and what preference they have for the type of dressings, but also for the type of fixation, what sort of things they're going to want to do with regards to activities, if they still want to be working, for example. These type of things are all going to influence the type of dressing that you'll choose, and also how you're going to fix that dressing, how often you might want to change the dressing. And so you need to be thinking about these things, and if you do a good assessment of the whole patient and their wound, then you'll have a really good idea of what you can use that will meet the needs of this patient. So just a couple of slides here on some tips, and these are, I guess, actually based on what I tend to do with wounds. So some things that you should do, one of them is to cut, hopefully this makes sense, cut through a peelable backing. I quite often see people cutting the wrong way through a pedal backing or dressing, and then they try and take the backing off and it sticks to their fingers, sticks to itself. So normally a dressing will have a lift up flap that helps you peel the backing off, so you should cut through that rather than cutting across the backing, so it's easier to peel the backing off. One thing that I always do, and when I'm doing a homemade dressing, is to round the corners of all the adhesive tapes that I use or whatever I'm using to stick the dressing down, and you'll see that almost all commercially made dressings have rounded corners, and this is to prevent the corners catching on clothing or bedding and rolling the dressing off. So just spend a couple of extra moments to make round corners on your dressings. I also often make a template, so if I'm either myself or the patient in some cases, or the district nurse is going to be doing these dressings on a regular basis, I'll make a template if I'm making a custom fitted dressing, so that each time the dressing is applied you can get the same size and shape. I quite often will use something to protect the surrounding skin, and that's from excoriation from exudate most commonly, or from protection from adhesives and dressings and tapes. And to do that I often use an alcohol free skin barrier film, something like Cavalon or No Sting Skin Prep. Cavalon Durable Barrier Cream I also sometimes use, or in some cases I'll surround the wound with a frame of a thin hydrocolloid dressing or a fabric tape like Fixamil or Hyperfix, and then put my main dressing adhesive onto that so that the skin is being protected. I also try and use as thin a dressing as possible, and that is really for cosmetic purposes for the patient, so they don't have a large bulky dressing sticking out under their clothing or protruding from their face, for example. And in areas where there's a lot of hair, I will almost always, in agreement with the patient, clip their hair to make sure the dressing sticks on well, or I'll use a non-adhesive dressing so that and then secure it in a different way, and some of those examples you'll see later on. Some things not to do, some don'ts. Don't cut dressings that contain absorbent materials because they will leak out of the dressing and may go onto the wound, and also that will compromise the dressing's absorptive capacity as well. The exudate will tend to leak out the side that you've cut. Don't apply dressings and tape under too much tension, particularly in people with fragile skin, because you'll cause a blistering and excoriation and maybe even skin tears. Don't use dressings to reduce pressure, and I quite often see people using foams in particular to reduce pressure on people's heels, but really that doesn't work. What you need to do is use a pressure relieving surface for the patient, like an air mattress or an alternating air cushion. There are some dressing products that are not actually dressings that are designed to reduce pressure, and one that comes to mind is the Comfeel Ring heel ulcer dressing. That's really designed as a pressure relieving device, not as an actual dressing. Don't use adhesive dressings on fragile skin. More often than not you'll cause damage to the skin, maybe even skin tears again. And also don't forget to think creatively. A lot of the wounds that I have to, that I'm asked to see, are extensive and very difficult, and there's really no single dressing product that can be used for them, so I have to think a bit differently, use dressings in a different way, and create an individualized dressing for the patient. So one particular problem, and I'm sure you've all come across it, and it's always continues to be a bugbear of mine, is that the most common dressings that we have available to us are either square or rectangle, and they're flat. And you'll be well aware that most wounds are not square or rectangle, and that most body surfaces are not flat. So these dressings are predominantly designed for the most common wounds out in the world, and those are leg ulcers and pressure ulcers, and to some extent diabetic foot ulcers. So these wounds do occur on an area that's not flat, but it has quite an easy moldable surface, and the wounds are generally fairly small. They're not designed for large, irregularly shaped wounds on different unusual areas on the body. You need to consider shearing and friction, and again, that's one of the reasons why I round the corners of my dressing, so there's less chance of it catching and rolling up. And this is what often happens with hydrocolloids when they're put on someone's sacrum, either to protect their skin or to treat a pressure ulcer. And I often have nurses coming to me telling me the dressings are no good because they've rolled up all the time. And that's due to shearing and friction, and the patient's pulled up the bed, and as they slide down the bed, the dressing catches and starts to lift, and then the patient gets pulled up and they slide down again and the dressing starts to roll off. So it's really not the dressing, which generally they tend to stick quite well, it's how the patient is moving in the bed that causes the dressing to lift and come off. And patient activities as well, so things like shaped dressings that will fit the curvatures of the body more so the patient's able to move easier, and that when they move the dressing doesn't become detached. So this next slide has a few examples. Now, most of the shaped dressings that are available commercially are designed for the sacrum. So the pink one in the middle and the hydrocolloid dressings to either side of that are designed for the sacrum. The pink dressing at the top on the left is for a heel, as is the one on the right hand side. So there are quite a few dressings out there that are designed for specific areas, and they do tend to work quite well when they're applied in the correct way to the correct part of the body they're designed for. Some of these heel ones are also useful for elbows, and some of them even for other areas like the breast, especially the heel-shaped cupped Aleven dressing is very good for breast wounds. But you'll see there's oval shapes, and they do tend to fit better to the curved surfaces of the body as well. Again, on this next slide, there's some heel dressings. There's an Aleven heel dressing, that's a collar plus one, and then a Mepilex foam dressing down on the bottom left. And the foot on the bottom right of the screen has a Aleven adhesive, which has been, it's a square dressing which has been cut to fit a heel. So you can modify existing dressings to fit different body places as well, and they work just as well as the fancy shaped ones. So you don't have to stick with the square dressings that are in your cupboard. Talk to your local wound curators about what other size and shape dressings they've got. So just talking about size, and coming back to the issue I raised before about the size of dressings, a lot of the wounds that I see in oncology patients are quite large, and most of the dressings that I have available in my store cupboard are quite small. They're 5x5 centimeters, 10x10 centimeters, 10x20 centimeters. So I keep a small stock of larger dressings so that I don't have to use lots of small ones. When you do that patchwork type dressing, you tend to have them moving around, in some cases falling off, moving away from the wound and exposing the wound bed, which then can become stuck to the outer dressing, or can become traumatized and it can be painful. I always try to allow an overlap with dressings. There are some that need to be cut to the size of the wound, but in the main there should be at least a sort of 2 to 2.5 centimeter or 1 inch overlap over the wound edge to allow the dressing to cover the wound base. And in most cases modern dressings don't allow fluid from the wound to wick out onto the good skin and cause maceration. And another reason for doing that is that a number of new dressings, when as they absorb exudate, will actually shrink, and they, if they're cut to the size of the wound, they'll shrink away from the edges, again potentially causing adhesiveness, sticking of the dressing to the wound, or damage to the wound edges. So my advice is to think big. If you've got a big wound, you need big dressings. So there's some examples here. These are all large dressings in this region around 20 to 30 centimeters square, or in some cases I think one is 30 by 40. So these dressings are good for big wounds, but the little dollar signs you see on them denote the fact that they're all very expensive as well. So the bigger your dressings get, the more expensive they get. And in fact, the silver one there, which is Aquacel AG, a silver impregnated hydrofiber dressing, I ordered some of those for a patient. Actually, it's one of the patients who I have in this presentation later on. ordered two boxes of five of those dressings, and when my manager saw the bill for it, she just about fainted because it was $1,200 New Zealand, which is about £450. Doesn't sound so bad in pounds, but in New Zealand dollars that's quite a lot. But the thing is, with these dressings, and particularly the Aquacel and Mepitel, and even with the Actacoat, you can put it on and leave it on for a few days, so it's important to be aware that you're not going to be changing these every day and spending, you know, $600 a day. You can put it on, and in fact the patient that I put this dressing on, it was left on for 14 days following a particular burn protocol that we were using at the time. So it actually makes it quite cost effective. If you want to get even bigger, this is my friend Pedro, the mannequin. He's lying on a bed-sized ExiDry sheet, which is a specialised burns dressing, but also used in our department anyway quite a lot for patients who develop extensive acute graft versus host disease following allogeneic bone marrow transplant. They're very absorbent, designed so the patient can lay on it with no pyjamas or clothes on, exit it's absorbed into the dressing and kept away from the patient's skin. So these dressings are available, or this product is available as different size dressings, but also as a full bed sheet and a half bed sheet, and also as burn garments, and there's one of those coming up in a little while as well. So that's just some ideas and thoughts about dressings, and what I want to do now is focus more on particular areas of the body. So firstly, the head and the face, very difficult areas to dress, particularly for extensive wounds because of the physical location and the fact that the head and the face is our outward appearance to the world. So the cosmetic effect of any dressing is very important, so that the patient feels somewhat comfortable when they're interacting with other people. It's important to keep the senses free, and by that I mean you don't want to cover up people's ears and eyes and nose and if it's not necessary to do that. So I would encourage you to make sure that your dressings keep the ability to hear and see as free as possible. I always go for a minimalist approach as well, so this is where using thin dressings, but in some cases you have to have high absorbency, so a thin foam dressing which is reasonably absorbent would be good, or something like ExiDry as well, which is still quite thin but very absorbent. And also it needs to be fairly easy to apply. It's very difficult for a patient to sit for a long period of time having dressings done to wounds on their head and face areas. And if you sometimes, and I'm guilty of doing this myself, I can spend a lot of time doing a very intricate dressing on a patient, and then they're going to be looked after by the nurses, the district nurses in the community, and they don't have the time, or in some cases they don't have the resources to do that kind of dressing. So my approach is to have something that's easy and fairly simple and hopefully cost effective as well. So here are two patients that I looked after also again I think 3 years ago for the first one, and last year for the second one I believe. So the first patient has a cutaneous T-cell lymphoma of his scalp, and the second patient has an extensive basal cell carcinoma which was untreated. So these patients presented significant issues with dressing size and shape, and also fixation. So here are some ideas for fixing dressings to the head which were utilised with these patients. The first one is just the basic crepe bandage, which if it's done properly can keep a dressing on the scalp. The second one at the top is it's a elastic netting called SurgiFix, and it's folded over and made into a little cap to help keep dressing on the head. It also can be very effective. And at the bottom, this dressing, again, it's the SurgiFix, and it's designed as a balaclava, so it can do quite a large dressing over the head and even down onto the neck, and in some cases onto the face. And this one's quite good because you do leave the patient's face free, and also you can leave their ears free, and it's actually really easy to make this dressing. You just comes in a big roll, you unroll a bit, tie a knot in the end, cut the holes for their face and ears, and then stretch it out over their head. You may need another pair of hands to help keep the dressing in place while you're putting that on. But these approaches are really good because it's often very difficult to get a dressing to stick to the face, and particularly difficult to get to stick to the scalp unless the patient is willing to have their hair cut very short or an area around the wound shaved for the adhesive to stick. The breast and the chest, while they don't seem a particularly difficult area to dress, for patients who have extensive fungating breast wounds, it can be quite difficult to get a dressing that will fit their wound and stay in place. A similar problem for patients having radiotherapy to the breast as well, who get acute skin reactions, you need a dressing that's going to be large enough to cover the area, and you want to avoid adhesives, so you need something that's going to be able to be kept in place by different means of fixation. So one of the things that I often use for these patients is similar to the Surgi Fix netting, but it's making it into a vest, or I'll show an example in a minute. So this lady has had surgery for breast cancer on the right hand side. She had a mastectomy and a flap repair, the latissimus dorsi flap, but she has recurrent disease in that area, and she also has infiltration of tumour into her other breast as well. So these wounds were particularly fragile and bled very easily, so he needed to use a non-adherent dressing in trying to avoid adhesives on her skin. This next patient with an extensive, fairly superficial breast cancer again. It's completely destroyed one breast and is in the process of destroying the other breast. So the difficulties with this wound were the size of it, extending right across her chest, up to her neck and around her right hand side, and again with lymphedema of both arms because of tumour infiltration. So these patients, the primary dressing really comes down to the characteristics of the wound. So for example, in this case we chose a non-adherent dressing because of the trauma to the wound if the dressing stuck to the wound bed, and also issues with malodor as well, so using metronidazole gel to help with that. The secondary dressing was just a large combine or GAMG pad. In order to keep those dressings in place as simply as possible, what I use is a pair of disposable incontinence briefs, which are stretchy net, cut the crutch out and then cut in either side to turn it up the other way, and you get a vest which is quite comfortable for patients to wear, but it quite firmly holds dressings in place, and they're washable so the patients can use them a number of times. This is Pedro again, modelling the vest, so it can be used for men as well if they have a chest wound. So in the first photo, it's holding an eggsy dry dressing in place over the breast or chest area. And in the second one, rather than a dressing, in this case, it's holding a large adult incontinence pad in place. And these, although not designed for wounds, I will occasionally use for a large, particularly large fungating wounds where there's a lot of exudate and there's been a lot of leakage, because these pads are designed to cope with a lot of fluid and they lock it away now in a core, similar to, well, it's the same kind of technology as disposable nappies. And they also, for breast wounds in particular, tend to fit very well over the breast and under the arm, where a lot of fungating breast wounds tend to spread. Another patient here with extensive and quite superficial, again, ulcerating breast cancer, and just another example to show the use of a vest. In this case, it was a netting, well, I can't remember the name, but it's the surgical net that's used under plaster casts cut to form a vest as well, and again designed to be on this quite comfortable on the skin and relatively firm to keep the dressings in place. In this case, it was mainly a foam dressing being used against that wound. So, moving down the body a bit now to wounds around the buttocks. So, as I mentioned earlier with the hydrocolloid dressings, fixing a dressing around the buttocks can be very difficult because the patient sits on it, the patient slides up and down the bed on it, and also because they need to have bowel motion, so there's going to be potential contamination of the wound and potential dislodgement of the dressing when they go to the toilet. So it's again important to use appropriate size and shape dressings, so you can look at using some of those shaped sacral and buttock dressings. Using elastic netting underwear, again, I tend to use that because it's relatively cheap. They're disposable, but they can be reused if you want. And it's good as a secondary fixation as well. Helps prevent the catching of the wound, the dressing edges and roll up. And then choosing dressings that have the low profile edges to prevent them catching on bed clothes and clothing and rolling up. And a lot of the shape dressings do have that low profile edge. So just a few examples here, a large pressure ulcer on an elderly patient's sacral area. Not easy to manage because of the size and the location, and also you can see contamination, near fecal contamination. There'll be probably quite a lot of odour from this wound and a lot of exudate, and a high chance of it being infected as well. So important to choose a dressing that's going to cover that wound, help debride it, provide comfort for the patient, but also one that's going to allow her to still have bowel motions without causing contamination of the wound. And that is not easy because there's not very many dressings out there that will achieve all of those things in a wound like this. So here are a few examples of dressings on the sacral area. Hydrocolloid in the right hand corner. That's a square foam dressing applied at a different angle in the left hand upper corner. Another shaped sacral dressing in the bottom left, and then again the incontinence pad, and I will quite often use that as a secondary dressing, so have a primary dressing on say that big pressure ulcer on that lady, and then use this as a secondary dressing because it's highly absorbent, and also if she's incontinent, will help keep the contamination away from the wound by absorbing it. And then you can put netting underwear over the top of that, and relatively easy to replace. So these two people have acute graft versus host disease. Both of them had had matched unrelated allogeneic bone marrow transplants, and what happens here is that, for those of you who don't know, the bone marrow that's donated to the patient attacks that person's body because it recognises it as foreign. And one of the main target organs for graft versus host disease is the skin. And what happens in the worst cases is you get large blisters forming and they burst and expose the dermis underneath, so the whole epidermis detaches. And that's particularly evident in the photograph on the right hand side. You can see a lot of loose skin there where there's been large blisters formed and then burst to expose the dermis, and a lot of bleeding and pain. And because these patients have just gone through transplant, they're often immunocompromised as well, so at a high risk of infection. The difficulty here is that, again, these patients need to be able to go to the toilet, but you need to be able to retain a dressing on both of the buttocks, the thighs, and the hips. And that's not easy. And in fact, both of these patients provided us with a bit of a challenge, until we came up with this idea. Again, it's using my old friend Sergi Fix, which is the stretchy net tubing, and in this case we've used a piece a bit longer than from the top of the hip down to the knee, cut a hole about halfway across near to the top, then one whole band around the waist and the other up the leg, so that what it actually does is we'll secure a dressing over the buttock, the hip, and the thigh. And it can actually go all the way down the leg. And what we did for both those patients that I've showed you was to make two of these, one for either side, so that we could fix dressings to both buttocks, hips, and thighs, but they were still able to go to the toilet without disturbing the dressings. This is another dressing that I considered for these patients. It's an eggsy dry garment, so it's that burns dressing, but in this case it's designed for thighs and lower trunk, for in particular for burns obviously, and it comes as a flat dressing which you put under the patient, and then it all connects together with Velcro connectors, so fairly easy to put on. The downside of this dressing is that it's very expensive, and for those patients with the graft versus host disease, their wounds produce a lot of exudate, so we were changing the outer padding on those dressings every 1 to 2 days, and this dressing would have been far too expensive to use for that purpose. But it's still out there. That comes as vests as well, and in fact ExuDry comes in leg dressings, arm and hand dressings as well, so quite a wide variety of different styles of dressing from that one in particular product. Occasionally I will use negative pressure wound therapy or VAC therapy for wounds that have again difficult size and shape, but in particular difficult to manage exudate. Now you need to be a bit careful here, because you cannot use negative pressure wound therapy on fungating wounds, because what this therapy does is increases blood flow to the area and may potentiate growth of the tumor or encourage metastatic spread of the tumor. So not for use on fungating wounds, but I've found it particularly useful for dehisced abdominal wounds, and I've got a couple of examples to show you. But just to make some other points, this is particularly good for containing exudate and odour. It can really help reduce the number of dressing changes you're doing, particularly with a heavily exuding wound. If you're doing dressing changes 2 or 3 times a day, this can bring it down to once every 2 to 3 days. And also, particularly for abdominal wounds, it can provide quite good splinting support when it's in the wound. So this is a patient who's had a bowel resection and had anastomosis breakdown and then wound breakdown, and been back to theatre 3 times. And in the end, they put a protein mesh in his abdomen because it was so distended. In order to encourage healing and to manage the exudate, we decided to use VAC therapy on this patient. It was slightly complicated by the number of drains that he had as well. You see 2 drains downside, a PEG tube up on the right-hand side there. But with a bit of care, this is actually an old VAC dressing for those of you who know them. That's why the tube is put in through the top rather than with the track pad. But very good containment of the wound. Managed to avoid the tubes and drains around the place as well, and also provided a good measure of splinting for that wound, so the patient was able to cough and move around more easily. So the intent with this patient was to actually heal the wound, but using dressing products, we'd had a lot of difficulty getting them enough to fill that wound, because it was quite a large cavity, and then having to change them very frequently. This next patient followed a similar sort of course, in that they'd had an anastomotic breakdown following bowel surgery, but in this case she also went into liver failure, hence the yellow colour of the skin, and she also developed a small bowel fistula in the centre of the wound where that opening is. Again, she had a PEG tube which is just up to the top right there under the wound measuring guide, and then on the left hand side she has a colostomy, both very close to the wound, making it very difficult to dress it. This lady was in intensive care and requiring dressings every 6 to 8 hours, with a large wound manager bag and coloplast paste, and it took the nurses a good hour or so to do the dressing, and then after about 6 hours it would start to leak out the bottom and causing excoriation of the skin. And also the small bowel effluent coming out of that central fissure was causing breakdown of the tissues around the wound. So I was asked to see her for advice on how they could manage this wound to keep the exudate away from her skin and to not have to change it so often. the only thing that I could think of at the time, and because the patient was becoming palliative, was to use VAC therapy. Again, this was from a few years ago, so it's the old style of VAC. But what I did was line the wound with a non-adherent dressing, which is Mepitel. You can just see that netting underneath the black foam. And that was because we didn't know exactly where that fistula went to in the middle. And then cut the foam and applied it to the wound. And so this dressing actually stayed in place for normally 2 days and sometimes up to 3 days. And she was transferred to another ward for palliative care and eventually died. But this dressing had solved the problem of exudate and provided her with a lot more comfort and certainly made life a lot easier for the nurses who were looking after her. So this was used as a palliative approach to wound care, for symptom control rather than trying to heal the wound. Although I'm saying that, I don't have a photo of it, but the wound actually improved quite considerably with this therapy on as well. Just a final example here of the topical negative pressure therapy. This patient had had a sarcoma removed from his thigh, along with one of his thigh muscles, and then had a rotation flap from his abdomen, which is the top part with the hair on it of this, what you can see there, a free flap, which is the sort of long strip of skin, which is discolorated, sort of reddy pink on the end, and then skin grafted in the open area, and in fact most of the skin graft is gone because of the wound not healing. So this patient, again, large wound, very difficult. There's a hole you can see between the two flaps, a small hole that was oozing, and the bottom half of the lower flap was not looking very viable at all, and a lot of slough at the bottom there above his kneecap. So in order to avoid further surgery, we applied VAC therapy to that. In this case, we'd moved to the new VAC ATS machine, so we had the VAC trackpad and also a battery operated machine. So when this dressing was on, the patient actually went home in his black cab. This is the patient I was looking after when I was working in London. So he caught a black cab home with his pump and then came back a few days later for me to change the dressing. This is at the first dressing change, and you can see that the wound has improved considerably, and in the meantime managed the symptoms of exudate and what was quite a large wound. And also, because the foam had overlapped onto the flap, the bottom half of that lower flap actually looks a heck of a lot better now as well. So a good approach for difficult wounds, using VAC therapy, either as a palliative approach, and I've used it a couple of times in that way, or with an intent to heal the wound in a large wound, where you need to encourage healing quite quickly, you want to encourage healing quite quickly, but also can be used for quite irregularly shaped wounds and also wounds in difficult areas as well. So the last thing I just wanted to mention was using bags. So if you've got a wound that has copious amounts of exudate, particularly if the opening is quite small, I will often use a fistula bag or a urostomy bag, which has a drainable tap on it. Or in some cases, I would use a wound manager bag, which are bags similar to a large colostomy bag designed specifically for wound care for large wounds with a lot of exudate. And those bags come in different sizes and also some different shapes as well. For small children, neonates and infants, if they have wounds, and particularly this has been done for extravasation wounds in the hand and foot, you can use a sterile plastic bag with a hydrogel in it. Ideally one that doesn't have propylene glycol in it because of the absorption through the, especially neonatal skin. I have a photo of that which I'll show you. It's a good idea. I've also used in burns as well, bags for hands and feet. So this is a patient with a large deposit of melanoma on his back, having radiotherapy at the time. So a lot of exudate being formed as the wound was necrosing from the radiotherapy and pouring out through this hole in the middle. And after trying a lot of different dressings, the thing that we found that worked best for this patient, because he was still working, and so he wanted to go back to work from the hospital, but he needed to have the exudate and the odour from the wound contained. We eventually found that a medium-sized wound manager bag worked best for this man. And this one is a Convatec bag, and it has actually a window in it that can be opened to access the wound to clean it or apply other dressing products. And it also has a charcoal filter in it, which can help, or it does help filter out the smell. And at the bottom, which you can't see, there's a drainable tap so the exudate can be drained out and the bag left in place, similar to a ileostomy bag or a urostomy bag. This next photo is just of a little baby foot in a plastic bag with some gel on there following extravasation, I think of blood, and that just helps. It's so easy just to put their little foot or hand into a bag rather than trying to put a dressing and keep it in place. So just another idea. So that's my take on dressing wounds in difficult places. Just some ideas, as I said, mainly from my practice and from my experience. The last thing I wanted to touch on is really just as a reminder that it's not just the wound that we're looking at in these people, it's the person themselves, and often even wider than the person, their family and their friends and their carers. So this slide is just some points taken from the literature on chronic wounds, and in particular studies that have looked at what it's like to live with a chronic wound. And these are some of the most common symptoms and problems that patients will identify, and in particular the two bold ones, pain and social isolation, the two most commonly noted issues for patients with chronic wounds. But a lot of other things, like exudate and malodor, two of the most difficult to manage symptoms, but also, again, two of the biggest problems for patients. A lot of psychosocial problems as well, anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, and then the impact that having a wound has on other roles in the patient's life and in their family's lives as well. Just a pointer around the emotional and social distress. So these wounds, in particular wounds like fungating malignant wounds, have a big impact on the patient's body image. And in particular with these wounds, they're a constant visual reminder that the patient has a life-limiting disease. And when they've got these other symptoms associated with them, like leaking exudate, the smell, and the pain, it really impacts on their life considerably. A while ago, I did some work on fungating wounds, trying to develop an assessment tool, and one of the things that I did as part of that was to develop a conceptual model of a fungating wound, looking at how the wound impacts on the patient's wider life. So this is the model that I came up with. So in the center is the wound, or it's the disease, but in this case it's the fungating wound, and the smaller circles are highlighting the most common symptoms that these wounds present with, so exudate, bleeding, pain, odour, pruritus, and where the circles overlap, I've tried to indicate where the symptoms interact as well. So if there's a lot of exudate, for example, that tends to affect the surrounding skin, causing excoriation, which leads to pruritus and pain. When there's infection, that increases the amount of exudate, and also exudate contributes to odour as well in the wound, and again infection contributes to odour. So these things interact, they're not symptoms just occurring either, you know, individually. So what this model is trying to illustrate is that the wound in the centre firstly impacts on the patient's physical functioning, so you've got discomfort, restricted movements, the cosmetic effect of the dressing being used for the wound. Then that impacts on their psychological functioning, so you have people feeling ashamed of their body, embarrassed, depressed, anxious, fearful of what's going to happen. And then that more widely impacts on their general health perception, so they feel helpless, their self-esteem is low, and the change in their appearance is something that patients talk about a lot. And then finally, all of these things impact on the patient's social and role functioning, so they have an impact on their family, an impact on their relationships with other people, with their friends, with their loved ones, financial problems if they can't work, communication problems because of the isolation, because people don't want to visit them or they don't want visitors, or for example, even if the wound is affecting their face and they can't communicate properly. So really it's just to illustrate that while I've been focusing on how to manage the wound itself, it's really important to have a broader view and focus on the effect of the wound on the patient, and also in the case of patients with cancer, it's the effect of their overall disease and the treatments on the patient as well. So just to finish with a quote that I use quite often when I'm talking about wound care. It's quite old now, but I think still very important. It says that treatment should be realistic and accepted by the patient and their carers. If the treatment does not promote quality of life and sense of well-being, it should be changed. Few treatments are absolute, and when the prognosis is short, the primary aim should be to promote comfort. And lastly, just to finish off with another shot of the beautiful country that I live in, New Zealand. This is down in central Otago of the, I think it's the Clutha River. So thank you very much for your attention. I think I've run about right to time, which is good. So what I'll do now is I'll just switch over the screen that I'm looking at so that I can see the chat, and if anyone has any questions, feel free to type them in and I will answer them as best I can. So thank you all very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it and I hope you've found some useful tidbits out of that as well. Thank you.